Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
This is Robert Moss. We're going to talk today about shamans and dreamers, the interweave between what true shamans do and what dreamers know and experience. I've sometimes been startled that in the neo-shamanic movement, there are some people who don't seem to understand the central importance of dreaming to all of this. But in indigenous traditional cultures, shamans, shamanic healers, shamanic warriors are very often called to their vocation by dreams. Dreams might be part of an experience of illness, a shamanic initiation which has its price. In the language of the Kanyenka Haka, the Mohawk Indians, which I had to learn because of my dreams, the connection between the dreamer and the shaman is built into the language. The Mohawk word for a shaman is Radzevzots, which means literally one who dreams, implying one who dreams strong, one who dreams true, one who has the ability to shift consciousness and accomplish things in the dream state that can help others. These things might include finding where soul has gone and bringing it back to the body. These expeditions might include checking out the possible future, scouting the ways for an individual, a family, or a community. So this is what we're going to explore, the connection between dreamers and shamans. Are you ready? Let's put ourselves into a slightly deeper space, shall we? I'd like you to get comfortable. I'd like you to get relaxed. I'd like you to think about your own connections with the dream time. Perhaps you've been receiving a call in terms of your own life vocation. Perhaps you've been seeing glimpses of the future, which can prepare you for the roads that lie ahead. This is going on every night of our lives. You will just pay attention. So I'd like you to get your body into a comfortable, relaxed position and call up right now in your mind a dream or a memory like a dream that might be with you or might be ready to play with you. You know, if you've been missing your dreams, if you've been in a dream drought, you're in a condition which is very widespread in our modern society. It's a serious condition. The absence of a relationship with dreams of the night is regarded by many traditional dreaming societies as a prime symptom of soul loss. In other words, you've lost your dreams, you've lost your connection with your night dreams because the beautiful, bright dreamer in you went away, maybe through pain, through abuse, through trauma, through things that made the world seem so hard and so difficult and so cold that part of you didn't want to stay around. So right now would be a good moment, if you've been having a hard time connecting with dreams, to start building the connection again. Maybe you'll find, as you think about it, that the dream or memory that wants to play with you right now is something that goes all the way back to childhood. For a long
time. Yeah, I can't hear it really well.
The last dream you remembered. So see if you can pull that up and have that in your mind as we begin to enter into the conversation. We have a wonderful guest today. I think he's on the line now. We seem to have lost him for a moment. Willem, are you there?
I'm there. Hi. Yeah, I had some trouble.
Which means you were here. I'm sorry. You weren't there when I came on, and I didn't hear any signal that you'd come through, so I began getting people primed to discuss dreaming and shamanism and dreams in their own lives. Let's take a moment now to introduce you. Our splendid guest today is Willem Hartman. He is a shaman and a dreamer. He teaches courses marrying shamanism and dream work in ways that I much approve of. He's also one of my certified teachers of active dreaming. He's mostly active in France. Like all good Dutch people that I know, he speaks many languages, which makes us lazy Anglos feel nervous and ashamed of not speaking languages as well as the average educated Dutchman does.
Speak French.
I know from Willem's life, from what I know about Willem's life, that he was called to his shamanic practice by dreaming and had a lot of what we call nightmares and scary dreams as a kid.
Mm.
His website is willemhartman.com. You can find him there. So, Willem, let's start, since I was encouraging people to call up dreams and memories of childhood, let's start with what you remember about being called to the deeper life by scary things when you were a kid.
Okay, I think that my earliest memories are memories of dreams, actually. And when I go over them, it has an element of visitation, beings that come into my dreams, that push me, ask me questions, tell me what to do. While going over the material lately, I was wondering if I didn't have a lot of out-of-body experiences as well. Floating or having the experience of being outside of my body and floating on the ceiling and watching myself in the bed. That is usually something that as a kid, well, perhaps a lot of people have it and perhaps they forget it. I didn't forget it. It stayed. And I tried to talk about it to people, but I was born in a culture that was slightly hostile to non-ordinary experiences. So in a way, these experiences in themselves, they awakened me. They have always stayed. They never went away. And, it pushed me. It pushed me to research it and to accept it, not so much to fight it. I hope that explains something.
Yes, I think you've thrown a lot of people into deep into the well of memory, and the people who haven't necessarily retained the memories as vividly as you have will now be thinking about what they knew, what their child self knew. Of course, sometimes the reason that we lose those memories of childhood experiences is that we suffer what shamanic types call soul loss, which you understand well because a central part of your practice is to help people get more of soul back into their bodies. So you continued remembering, but of course human animals are forgetful, aren't we? We forget and remember, remember and forget. Talk to us, since the subject has now surfaced directly and I was talking about a little bit before we brought you on and I introduced you, talk to us a little bit about your understanding of soul loss and the modalities of soul recovery and soul retrieval.
Okay, soul loss. The way I explain it, soul loss is a loss of essence, of perhaps of a piece of the self. It's a strange phenomenon because we were taught that soul is only one thing, and you can have a soul and that's it. Some cultures believe that there are many souls. We have many souls. We tend to think we have one. What seems to happen occasionally is that we can lose pieces of our soul. We can fragment. This can you can imagine that if you're in a car and you have a car accident, the last place you want to be in is behind the steering wheel. So a piece of you goes away. A piece of you hides. This is, in a sense, a survival strategy. It allows you to react. What would be good is after the accident, and of course you have nothing, is that the piece of yourself comes back. But sometimes it doesn't come back. So this happens in accidents, but it can also happen in a situation of violence when somebody is somebody can shout at you. Somebody can be physically violent. People who go off to wars, this can create soul loss as well, and so fragmentation. We feel that a piece of ourselves is missing. We have an emptiness. We could say that we're not walking on the line of our lives. We're walking next to ourselves. There's a feeling of disconnect, of dissociation. It's close. It looks a bit like PTSD, post-traumatic stress syndrome. There are other reasons why we could lose soul. Some people give pieces of their soul away to other people. People who are bossy, people who take a large chunk of their lives. Not only do we give away away pieces of ourselves and of our higher being, of our essence, people can also take that. I think there's another reason, pretty important, why we can lose soul, is that we're not in accordance to the soul of our lives. Sometimes I explain it like this. Imagine a person who is meant to play piano, a real pianist, and that person wants to make music, but specifically piano. But this person is born in a family where art is not conceived of as something that is good. So he hears all the time, don't do that. That's not a job. You can't be a pianist. You must be an accountant, or you must be a policeman. They're all very good jobs, by the way, if any accountants are listening, or any policemen. But this person needs to play piano, and the person doesn't play piano because he listens to that. And then what happens? Well, the soul of the pianist goes away. The soul of the piano goes away. And that person will have a hole. So what
happens? Yeah, I'm very glad you honed in on this aspect, Willem. This is so important.
Yeah.
Soul loss is not just occasioned by grief and trauma and violence and abuse. Those are obvious causes of soul loss. Soul goes away. Our brighter, larger self goes away when we're not doing our life calling, whatever that happens to be. And whether we regard this simply as an aspect of ourselves and or also our relationship with greater powers, with our own creative spirit or daimon, we are different, depending on whether we're doing what our life calling happens to be or failing to do it. In my own life, I notice that if I'm not doing new things, not risking myself on the edge, not bringing something creative into the world in ways which are sometimes challenging and dangerous, my larger creative spirit is not available because I'm not interesting enough. This isn't perhaps so much an example of soul loss or the need for soul recovery. It's simply an example of the fact that we draw different spirits, we draw different energies according to how we are living or failing to live. And if we're not living a joyful, playful, adventurous life, the part of us that is the magical child and the part of us that is the creative spirit are not likely to be around. Now, Willem, you practice soul retrieval and you teach people various ways of connecting with the moreness of their being, and you lead courses and trainings of your own in Europe. Talk to us a little bit about your practice. Feel free to bring in some examples of what has worked to bring back a part of the person's vital essence that needed to come back.
Okay. Well, the first thing that's important to say is that you can never, ever, ever do a soul retrieval on a person without any training. You must have good.
Right.
You must have training. This must be by a credible person.
Now let's be clear. Let's be clear, because people are more used to hearing about dreams and dream work in this series than about the shamanic operation called soul retrieval. You and I understand what it is. Our friend Sandra Ingerman literally wrote the first accessible book about this for Westerners back in 1990. I've known her since then, and you've studied with her as well.
Yes.
Shamanic soul retrieval, as you're talking about, is an operation. It is a physical operation. It involves carrying something and putting it back into the body of the person who suffered soul loss. I don't do much of that anymore. I do a process that I call soul recovery, by which we gather around like family and help the person as they become the practitioner, the shamanic practitioner of their own soul. So I just needed to draw the line. You're talking about an operation where a practitioner is going to do something for you, intervene in your life, go make a journey, go and find something that is missing from you and physically put it back into your body. Is that a fair summary?
Yes, that's it. Do you want me to explain that?
Yes, I think we. I mean, not everybody listening will be familiar with this. Many will be, but not everyone. So give us a simple explanation of soul retrieval as you practice it.
As I practice it, well, a client comes to me. A person says, I feel empty. I lack joy. I feel depressed, etc., etc. So I need their permission in order to do it. Then I will use what we call the shamanic journey, which is very much like dreaming in a way. By using a drum, the drum rhythm brings us into a slight trance state, and then we direct our attention to the other world. You might think this other world, the spirit world, is the same thing as the dream world. with the help of my allies, imagine that like a, what people call a totem animal. I don't really like the word an ally, a guide.
Totem is misused. Keep away from totem, please. Just say ally or guardian or power animal.
With the help of that ally, I go look, or we go look, the ally and me, during the journey, during the shamanic journey, for those lost soul parts. And me, as a shamanic practitioner, I cannot decide beforehand what it is I will bring back, what we will bring back. I have to trust my allies. There's a lot of trust in there. Imagine my journey is largely visual. In that case, I may find a child that is lost. This may be the soul part of my client that has gone away because a parent was mean or because of an accident, etc., like described before. And then we bring back the soul. I personally, since I work with a drum and the spirits taught me to work with the drum, I put them in my drum, and I bring them back to the client. And
so your drum is your soul carrier. Your drum
exactly,
is your soul catcher. That's
exactly. I was not taught by Sandra Ingerman to do that. There is another technique, but the spirit said, put it in your drum. And
well, let me just interrupt you for a moment. Yeah. Do you use other physical objects like crystals or anything else?
Yeah, well, I have an altar with some statues on it, statues that present some of my allies, like a black panther, by the way, which is an ally that came to me in a dream, a nightmare that turned well, and this nightmare being became an ally of mine. I don't really use crystals that much. I used to work with shamanic mirrors. Now, for those who are not, who do not know what it is, a shamanic mirror is an object, not too big, round, made out of bronze, used in northern Asia, what we call Siberia, since a very long time. I kind of use those objects, but I don't really need it. I do like to work with a drum, though.
Okay, let's say, Sam, I don't want us to get distracted, even though I'm the original cause of the distraction, will it? I'm just focusing in on the idea that a certain kind of object will be the soul catcher or soul carrier, and for you it's the drum. I asked about crystals because many of us have used some kind of crystal or citrine as a soul carrier. So let's carry on with your very clear so far description of what you do in a typical soul retrieval operation.
Okay,
you've got the things that you've got the spirit, you've got the soul trapped in your drum. What do you do then?
The soul is not trapped. The soul is there voluntarily. I usually don't take more than three souls with me. After a while, I will stand up and will bring the soul to my client, and we do that by blowing. Basically, imagine my hands are cupped, the soul will be there, I will be in a trance, so I will be aware that I'm physically in my working space, my office. At the same time, I'm connected with the spirit world, and I see or feel the soul. Lately, it's more feeling-based than anything. I used to be very visual, and I found that being very visual sometimes gives me too many details and distracts me from what's really going on, and so I really want to feel it. I don't want just to blow hot air on somebody. It really needs to be a transfer. What is important afterwards is the moment of integration, because the soul retrieval in itself, it could be rather long. It's not just drumming and getting a soul. Beforehand, I cleanse the client. There is taking away. There is making some space. There is an element of divination. The spirits will speak to me and explain where I have to go. Sometimes I not only bring back a soul, but also an ally for my client, an ally that can help my client.
Yeah.
What is then important after the blowing in of the soul is the period of integration. So what I do is that I take a rattle around the person, but for quite a long time, 5 minutes or so, and I ask the client just to be light, pure light. And me, I connect myself also with pure light. And I see my client in his or her divine aspect, and I hold that. I hold that as long as I keep my concentration.
Thank you for very...
Yes?
Thank you for a very clean and clear description of your practice. I think we'll pause you there for a moment, Willem. So we're hearing Willem Hartmann, the shamanic practitioner, as well as the teacher of active dreaming and other things, talking about, let's say, the classic pattern for soul retrieval. He's described it in a clean and clear way. And I would absolutely accept that it might be a very necessary form of help for people who are not yet able to help themselves sufficiently. As we move on into the conversation after the break, I'm going to introduce the idea with Willem, which he's familiar with already, that another way of approaching soul recovery is to help someone to journey into their own image. They might be lacking dreams because the dreamer inside them has gone, but maybe some life memory from childhood could be the portal. I want to talk to Willem about what I have discovered again and again and again, and it's this. Someone who suffered soul loss and maybe even had a disrupted connection with dreams for many years can be encouraged to take the last dream they remember, maybe from 30 years ago, travel with the help of the drumming back into that dream with support, with protection within the collective energy of the circle, and meet their younger self in her own situation and do two things. One is to be play mentor and counselor to that younger self in a time of grief or pain or vulnerability, working across time to support the younger self in her own now time. And the second is to pick up and collect often some aspect of the energy joy of that younger self. So we're going to move the conversation with Willem into the areas where really deep dream work and shamanic results consort together, and where we use the drumming as a method of shifting consciousness safely and effectively that will work not only in relations with an individual, but with a whole circle. If you're looking for Willem, his website is Willem Hartmann, that's WILLEMHARTMAN.com, and he's a very active teacher of both shamanism and dream work in Europe, and you might want to look for him. He is a man of great integrity who's lived what he talks and paid the price of initiation into the shaman's way. You're listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Noss. We'll be back after the break.
Where can you find out about dreams and the dream world? MossDreams.com. At MossDreams.com, you can find out about Robert Moss, his work, and discover the way of the dreamer. Read numerous articles and essays on almost every facet of dreams. Find out Robert's class and workshop schedule. Read reviews and so much more. Visit MossDreams.com to find your way of the dreamer. That's MossDreams.com.
Robert Moss has a deep engagement with the dream world, and now you can take a crash course from this master of active dreaming at your own pace. That's right. You can get Robert's 8 exciting half-hour programs on a new DVD set called Way of the Dreamer. Share Robert's story as a dreamer and dream healer. This dynamic 3-DVD set can help teach you how to find your way through your dreams to realize your full potential. Don't wait to learn the practical dreamwork techniques that can help you understand how to attain better health, emotional stability, spiritual awareness, and more. Order Way of the Dreamer DVDs today from Amazon.com or MossDreams.com. That's MossDreams.com.
Vistaprint. I'm sure you've heard the name. Over 17 million small businesses and consumers have used Vistaprint for printed products ranging from business cards and brochures to invitations and thank you cards. Why? Because Vistaprint has the lowest price guarantee, and you can design your products with templates or upload your design. And they have free products. 3-day rush service and satisfaction is always guaranteed. Try Vistaprint. Just go to the HealthyLife.net advertiser page and click on the Vistaprint logo.
When you're looking for bedding, department store prices can shock you. Well, be shocked no more. Sell steak cheap, not cheap steak. That's the motto of Anna's Linens. Although they don't sell steak, they do sell the best bedding, bath, and home decor items. They strive to provide their merchandise at extreme value to their customers, and they do it. Great everyday prices on everything and military discounts. Plus, if you visit them online, they have clearance items and internet specials. Visit them online now at HealthyLife.net's advertiser page.
We're HealthyLife.net, reaching and helping a worldwide audience without hype, without shock, and without shenanigans.
Welcome back. You're listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Moss. Our wonderful guest is Willem Hapten, a European practitioner of shamanism and dreamwork. Well, let's talk about dreaming as we live it, our own dream lives, what dreaming does for people, how the technique of dream reentry, which is where shamanism meets dream work in the practice of active dreaming, what that can accomplish. Learning to go back into a place that is a dream and do something more in it. You've done this yourself. You've done it with other people. Talk to us a little bit about dream reentry as you've experienced it and practiced it.
Okay, where can I start?
Well, then, while you're thinking about it, let me give you an example from this weekend. As you know, I like fresh stories. Many of your stories are going to be fresh to me, but while you're thinking about it, let me tell you a story from this weekend. A woman in my weekend workshop remembered a dream from when she was 9 years old. She remembered actually a situation from her life when she was 9 years old, and she felt very sad for herself because she was rejected for place on a cheerleading squad. You may know in America they have these groups of pretty young girls who jump up and down and wave things and cheer sports teams on. They're called cheerleaders. So she remembered, it was coming out of memory rather than dream, a situation she was very sad at 9 years old or something like that because she wasn't on the school cheerleaders squad. So she decided with encouragement to travel back with a journey with the drum back to that 9 year old self in her own time and reassure herself that she would be appreciated, that people would acknowledge her beauty, that she'd have a nice relationship later on, she would make it through. And in the course of the journey, she also somehow seemed to pick up something of the energy of that younger self. So she's playing cheerleader, cheering on the younger self, while also bringing something back that all the energy and joy of that younger self. So that's an example of maybe memory reentry rather than dream reentry.
It is a it is something that I teach also during my normal shamanic classes. When I teach shamanism in my workshop, I always teach dreaming, and basically the idea for me here is also time travel, because we have the ability with a shamanic journey and using a dream as a portal to go back to a younger self and do an interview like you described before. Get to know things, understand better, understand differently, and then you can also receive back the energy that the younger self has. For instance, somebody who had a lack of joy, has a lack of joy at this moment, can journey back to a version of him or herself that is much more joyful. Have the interview, understand perhaps why there is no joy now, and this understanding is important, but in itself doesn't bring a real solution. Now, if it is possible also to receive the energy that is still there, so that is still present inside the dream world, perhaps merging with themselves, and by coming back out of this journey, bringing back the images of the dream that was dreamt on inside the journey, drawing it, for instance, or making a poem, or even dancing the younger self, well, then this joy will come back, re-manifest itself in life.
Yes,
and
beautiful.
Yes, and for me, that's always time travel. I always feel a bit like Doctor Who when I do this.
When I lived in London, I lived around the corner from Doctor Who. Tom Baker, my favorite Doctor Who, lived around the corner from me in Bayswater. In the London mist in the morning, I'd sometimes run into Doctor Who in his flapping scarf. So that speaks to me from my life. I'm going to give you a story. I don't remember whether you were at this workshop. It was the Hameau de l'Étoile, near Saint-Martin-de-Londres, near Montpellier in southern France, where Willem has attended workshops and trainings with me over quite a few years. Some years, it was another example of dream reentry in the cause of soul recovery. So we had a French woman in the workshop who was really ticked off. She was not happy. She'd done all sorts of shamanic practice. and all sorts of yoga. She'd followed various spiritual disciplines. But she was very unhappy by the second morning of the residential workshop. And I said, what's the matter with you? She said, well, I don't have any dreams. I have all this deep spiritual practice, but I don't do dreams. I don't remember dreams. And all you people are sitting down having your coffee and talking about dreams, and I don't get it. I said, she was so angry and difficult, I said, I don't believe you. She said, what? You think I'm lying? No, I don't believe you have no dreams. Would you tell me the last dream you remember? She pauses, she thinks. Then she tells me a dream from 30 years ago. She was 9 years old at the time, so obviously she's 39 at the time of the episode. And she goes, well, the last dream I remember is a dream in which a hand is reaching from behind a curtain and is offering me chocolate. And she says, I love chocolate, but my parents told me don't take candy from strangers, so I don't take it. And I'm yelling for my parents, and I wake up screaming, Maman, Papa, come. And they say, it's just a dream, go back to sleep, which stupid adults do to kids all the time. So she is now frightened, and she prays, good Catholic girl, she praises to Jesus and Mary and all the saints. No more dreams, please, and her prayers are answered. For 30 years, she's remembered no dream. So I look at her and I say, why don't you go back inside the dream right now? And she's frightened. She's 39 years old now, and she's had all these life experiences, but the dream still scares her. She says, will you come with me? I say, well, we can form a small group, because we're going to work in small groups. I can be in your group, but you're going to do the work for yourself, please. This is what I love about turning people into the shamans of their own souls, Willem. So she finally agrees reluctantly that with the drumming, she'll go back into the dream from when she was 9 years old, and she does. And we're with her. We see it. We're traveling together. I'm highly visual, as you are. So I see it. She pulls back the curtain. It takes an effort of courage to do it. Behind the curtain is a radiant being of angelic brightness. The facial features are not clear to begin with, but they become more distinct. And she recognizes now the face of a man she loved. It was her father's best friend. He owned a toy shop. He let her play there after hours. Nothing bad about it. Very nice, decent, friendly paternal relationship. He says, oh, it was you. Why didn't you show yourself? He said, oh, Cherie, you've forgotten. I died in that car crash a few days before I tried to give you the chocolate. And I wanted to give you something sweet because I loved you, but I couldn't show you my mutilated face. I didn't know how to change it at that time. And there are tears, and he comes back from the journey. And, I mean, that's really beautiful information, but like Willem, I want results, and we get results. The next morning, Willem, yeah, is at the breakfast table before the rest of us because she's eager to tell her dreams. She's speaking like a train grande vitesse, like a high-speed speed train. She tells us 8 dreams, one after another after another, and as she tells the dreams, it's like there are fireflies of returning soul all around her. So that's an example of how our techniques of active dreaming can turn a person into the shaman of their own soul with family support and with a technique and a guidance system that works. And if we bring back the dreams, we bring back the soul. That's my experience anyway.
If you allow me, there I remember an exercise I did with a group. It was a psychopomp workshop. It means we work with death. And with the afterlife and making death your ally, etc. There is a person who brings a dream in the morning, because I always give people homework after the first night, after the first day. So dream something, tomorrow morning bring back a dream. If you don't have a dream, make something up. So this person comes with a dream and talks about how she went to a banquet with people. She had to cross one room and then go down the stairs and then go into a banquet hall. There was a table, there were people, there were plates on the table. So I would decide, okay, we can journey on this, but we can also explore it deeper. We journeyed on it, and then afterwards we did a dream theater. A wonderful technique that you taught. So since I'm the workshop leader, with permission of people, I tell people what roles they have. So some people actually played the plate or the stairs, the people at the banquet, the people with the group of the dreamer that came into the banquet place. We set it all up. We do the dream theater. And when it is the turn of the dreamer to play the main character, she walks around in the banquet hall, looks at one of the guests, and she starts to have tears and says, I know who you are. you are my friend who died when I was 19 years old, and your parents hid it all. Suddenly you disappeared. They didn't really refuse to tell me where you were. This person, so she meets inside the dream, but now inside through a dream theater exercise, her old friend that she missed so much. She did not understand why this friend died. She could never go through the mourning experience, and there she could, and it was a release, and in a sense a finding back of a, not just of a friend, but a piece of herself that was missing as well. This friend of her who died, this was a long time ago, she developed a disease and shame around this this disease. And it was really, really a healing experience. And that person really got better from it.
What an excellent story, Willem. And we learned two things from you. First is a dream is a place. If you've been there, you can go there again. And the second is the cathartic, the therapeutic value of performing these things in theater, constellating the energies and the personalities involved in the dream or the journey, and great healing, great bonding, great passion, great emotion, sometimes great laughter out of pain emerges in that theater. We're talking to Willem Hartman, shamanic practitioner, teacher of active dreaming, very active in France and in Europe. We'll be back to talk more with him after the break. You're listening to Way of the Dreamer with Robert Knott.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. mossdreams.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
You're listening to HealthyLife.net, the radio network that brings positive talk with positive change to make your world a little better.
All right. You're all listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Moss. Our lively guest is Willem Hartman, European teacher of shamanism and dream work. Before we go on, I must tell you that you can still sign up for my current online course, the Shift Network, Dancing with the Bear. It's about reclaiming the arts of dream healing and using active dream imagination and deep play for healing your soul, your body, and your life. Shift Network, Dancing with the Bear. You can still sign up this week. After that, it'll be too late. But we've only done one class. You can play catch up with the recording and the transcripts. We're having so much fun. The liveliness of this group is, I think, beyond anything I've experienced with an online course before. So there's that. And I would ask you to go over to mossdreams.com, my website, and look at all the offerings in the round in various parts of the world as well as online. Willem's website is willemhartman.com, and go over there and see what he's offering. Willem, we're talking about different styles of dreaming, and I want to say briefly something I was saying to you during the break, and then I would invite you, if you like, to continue the comment you were starting to make.
Okay.
I was saying that maybe because I'm a bookish person, and maybe because, although I'm a lazy linguist, I do love wordplay across languages and across mindsets. A typical lead from my dreams, a typical clue from my dreams that I have to play detective with, is a funny phrase, or sometimes just a single word.
in language I don't know or don't know very well, or maybe an archaic version of a phrase. I got one in Spanish last weekend, and I could recognize some of it, but it took some real detective work and some consultation with my Spanish coordinator to realize that the dream was orienting me to think about strange megalithic monuments, giant animals carved by the Tetones, a pre-Iberian, probably Celtic people of the Spanish, of the Iberian Peninsula, and to understand possible sacrificial meals and other rituals conducted in connection with these statues. This as the prelude and the preview of a workshop I'm leading on dream archaeology and ancestral healing in Barcelona in April. So that's an example of my start of dream. As I started talking about that to you, you started remembering an important dream and perhaps a still mysterious dream from your early life. You want to go on to that part of our conversation?
Sure. I do my best in my shamanism not to take anything from cultures that are not mine. I don't want to do any cultural appropriation. So I avoid working with Native American shamanism. I can be inspired by it, but I don't want to work with it. Yet, when I was in my 20s, so I must have been like 25 or something, I had one of those visitation dreams in the hypnagogic state. In the middle of the night, a totem pole being walks up to my bed. And I would say it was as clear as I can see the radiator here in the room that I'm sitting in. It walks up to my bed very stiffly because, well, it is made out of wood. So it walks up to me and starts speaking in a language that I do not understand, and it goes on for like half a minute. It makes me sort of nervous, you know, that happening in the middle of the night. I'm scared, so I could qualify it as a nightmare, but nobody got hurt. One word I remember afterwards is Sasquatch.
Sasquatch, okay.
Sasquatch. But being a silly person, for weeks I have been looking at the map of Canada and trying to book a flight to Saskatchewan. What do I know? I don't know. It's only much later on that somehow by chance, if you want, a coincidence, which may not actually exist, I understand it's the wild man of Northern America, one of the names that we give to this wild man, sort of a yeti, something that perhaps we can find as well in European culture. But, like you say, no, it is not resolved. I still don't know why this totem pole being comes there, speaks in this language. I wish I had a tape recorder at the time, but I did not. It still intrigues me, and I'm kind of waiting for it to one day to explain itself, for all the dots to connect. And I think this is an important thing in dream work and in shamanism. Patience is important. Dreaming,
patience is important, but and yet if you're feeling the call, of course, you can dive back into the dream across the years. You can go back inside the dream if the call is strong enough. This bit about cultural appropriation, etc. Yes, we all need to be sensitive to that, villain, but we receive direct invitations in our dreams and visions, and these are the most important visas and passports we can receive. I mean, I was invited into contact with Nebzebzots, a woman shaman and clan mother from 250 years ago of the Mohawk Indian culture, because she called me from a lucid dream in which I'm flying on the wings of a red-tailed hawk. She calls me to her place, speaks to me in her language, synchronicity confirms the signs. I study her language, and at the end of the story, well, in the middle of the story, I have traditional Mohawk speakers coming to me to recover words of their archaic spiritual vocabulary lost from the modern culture. I'm just a boy from the bush. I'm an Australian. I'm not a Mohawk Indian. I didn't want to become a Mohawk Indian, but I've called into that culture actually because, in my belief, I'm connected to an Anglo-Irishman who knew that culture very well and lived in the 18th century with the Mohawk Indians. I think there's a trans-temporal, multi-dimensional family aspect to that story. And I've had the same engagement experience with multiple cultures. With the Sami, I didn't follow the invitation to go and live with the Sami for a while in the far north. I like my creature comforts with an Aboriginal people of my native Australia, with a priestess success of Žemyna, the ancient earth goddess of Lithuania, and so on. I mean, we belong not only to our biological families, we belong to a multidimensional family, including spiritual traditions. And you understand this well. So let's not get too inhibited by the stuff about cultural appropriation when you might have a direct invitation, in your case, from the people of the Pacific Northwest to learn their stuff. It might relate to a past life or an alternate life you have. So let's not be inhibited by spiritually correct notions of people who don't have the direct experience.
Totally in agreement with you, as long as we do it with respect. We ask for permission, and we do it in honor. And I think if you do it like that, and you can work with people, I don't think there is a problem.
Of course, we see so many phonies, plastic people running around, shaking the rattles they don't have the rights to. So I understand your sensitivity and their sensitivity. But we are both people who trust and value direct experience. Mm-hmm. And we can speak on the authority of direct experience. Some of the problems comes when people rise up who don't have the direct experience. And it's so frightened of those who do have it that they want to stand between others and the direct experience of the sacred. The shamanism that I value, the dreaming that I value, is a form of direct connection with the sacred, and we don't want anything to interfere with that. All right, we're talking to Willem Hutton. This is Where the Dream with Robert Marsh. We'll be back to talk, amongst other things, about the trickster after the break.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
You are listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Moss. I can't resist sharing the bit from the lively conversation during the break that I just got to in talking with Willem Hutton, our wonderful guest today. We're talking about our connection with different traditions, the idea that we are members of multidimensional families with authentic connections with people and traditions across place and time. And I was telling Willem, on a special mountain in the northeast of America where I have advanced shamanic gatherings twice a year, I led 30 of our frequent flyers on a journey into the possible future. We agreed we'd go 7 generations into the future, and we would specifically look at how the work of our dream school has been carried on or not carried on, and what effect it has had. And we met people, wonderful people, using our techniques, the core techniques of active dreaming, and they regard us as the wise ancestors. This is terrifying. My goodness, we are supposed to be the wise ancestors. We better get our act together suddenly, haven't we?
That always makes me nervous. I don't see myself as wise. I know myself.
Well, that's right.
My wife knows me, and she reminds me quite often that, no, there's no wisdom there. So
That's right. So this already brings a trickster element into play. Well, then you told me that you're very interested in the trickster in life and in reality,
yes.
So am I. So tell me a little bit about your understanding of this trickster and the trickster as a factor in everything.
Well, of course, there's a trickster as a person, as a persona, something that we can talk to, that we can imagine as a person, like the Northern god Loki,
yes.
Or Coyote. Yeah, it's been in my life a lot, and usually when the trickster comes in my life, there's a lot of humor, a lot of surprise. I'm astonished. I'm slightly lost, which is, well, normal, but a bit more, perhaps, than normal. There's always a teaching. If I resist the trickster and his teachings and the humor, it just hurts. But if I go with it, I learn a lot. I don't know if this is dreaming, it may be shamanism. As a kid, since I had this calling, especially through dreams, but also paranormal experiences like clairvoyance, clairaudience, objects that move by themselves, I try to understand what is going on. How does this work? Am I crazy or not? And I thought, no, maybe I'm not crazy. Let's go test it. And I remember from an early age on, perhaps from 11, 12 years on, doing tests with the pendulum, putting cards with their back towards me and trying to feel the cards, which one is the ace of diamonds or another card. And what I notice is that quite often it works, but it works in the first go, and it works perhaps in the second go. The pendulum will bring me to the card I'm looking for. And that's amazing if you look at how many cards there can be in a fresh pack. How can a piece of string with a button on it find a card? Something is happening. And it works the first time, the second time, perhaps the third time, and then it stops. And I could never understand why this is the case. And I've read the same thing about experiences of telepathy. Why does sometimes it work in the laboratory with the scientific process? And then when you repeat it, or another team repeats it, it doesn't work. And it has been like a quest in my life. I need to find out what is going on. And lately I read this word called anti-structure. Not structure, anti-structure. As a force that is in the universe that you can't structure because it will resist it. And it is the essential element of surprise. It is the unknown. It breaks the mold, but it can create also a mold. It is absolutely astonishing, and it is the thing that since it breaks the rules, you can find with a piece of string and a button a card upside down. But as soon as you try to structure the experience, as you try to repeat it, it becomes rigid, it goes away, because in its nature, it is wild. And for me, that was an element of what I understood as trickster. It's only one of the elements. It is that surprising element. It is the element that breaks the rules and puts out his tongue at you. But he's not nasty, or it is not nasty.
Well, it's interesting that the first personified version of the trickster that you mentioned is Loki. I know a little bit about Loki, although I resisted from half my early life acknowledging that half my blood ancestry is Viking, and I better get more at ease with northern Scandinavian stories than I have been. But I'm living in the United States, where we see the dark side of the trickster in play to such an extent that chaos seems to be ruling our public life, and something has to be done to bring things back into balance. So when I look at it on the large scale, on the mega scale, I'm not quite as relaxed about the trickster factor in its darker side as I might be otherwise. On a more human individual level, I love the play of the trickster. I love, for me, the fox is the animal embodiment of the trickster more than the coyote. The coyote in the North American stories is pretty dumb. The fox is always pretty smart, so I like the fox better. I look at it this way. You know, there is a gatekeeper function in life personified by various beings. Loki is not one of the gatekeeper figures. The Nordics have a different gatekeeper altogether, and he's quite different from Loki. But in some of the stories, the gatekeeper, whether he's Ishu or Legwa of West Africa, or Hermes or Hecate of the Greeks, even Ganesha to some extent, the one who opens and closes your doors can get very tricky with you and slip you up if you are just not looking at the situation, persisting in some monomaniacal way of plowing straight ahead and not paying the entry price for getting somewhere. Ishu Alegwa, a gatekeeper of the Yoruba of West Africa, who also has a very trickstery side, he is also called the enforcer of sacrifices. So the trickster comes into play in an upsetting negative sense in that story, in those stories, in that mythic imagination, if you're not paying the ticket price to get to where you need to go, if you're not making the sacrifice. So these things are...
Yeah, please. If you allow me, I'm thinking of something. The northern gatekeeper in Nordic myth, the one who keeps the gate to Asgard, so the place where the gods live, is called Heimdall, and it is, if I'm not mistaken, it's Heimdall who battles Loki at the end of times.
Yes.
So there is a connection, and perhaps they could be mirror versions of each other. And Heimdall seems much more serious and a maker of order. The one who
yes,
made
Heimdall
also
does, Heimdall does seem, he does seem excessively solemn, doesn't he?
Yes.
Which is, I think I have to look at that again. Part of your influence in my life, Willem, is that you've been goading me to read more deeply the northern stories. I dreamed a long time ago that Tolkien told me I had to do this. You must study Scandinavian mythology, Robert. I'm not sure I've fulfilled the assignment yet. But if you do Willem Hartman, very lively conversation. His website is willemhartman.com. Go check it out. We'll be back for a short moment after the break. You're listening to Way of the Dreamer with Robert Knopf.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
You've been listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Moss. Willem Hartman and I have so much to talk about. The time has evaporated. Willem, thank you so much for calling in from Europe.
Thank you for inviting me. An incredible honor. Absolutely thrilled. And, time goes too quick when you're having fun.
Well, you're doing very good work. I hope to see you at Dreaming with Jung when I lead the Amour de l'Etoile in France in November. Okay. For those of you closer to the studio, I'm leading Dreaming with Jung over the last over coming weekend in Berkeley, California in March. Look for that. All right. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for being part of this very lively conversation today. And from now until next time, may your best dreams come true and may you remember them.